Good morning, Ugo.
Hey, Bukala, morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. The rains are finally here.
January, which is quite strange.
It's quite strange. I don't know why it's in a hurry. But some people appreciate the fact that it's been hot.
Someone told me that it rained heavily in Port Harcourt. Was it over the weekend or was it last weekend?
It was a bit heavy on the island today, yesterday as well.
So is this climate change?
It probably will soon start snowing. That would be the height. I don't think we have what it takes to handle snow.
We don't want that to. Mm-hmm. All right, we also got Taiwo in studio as well. Taiwo, how you doing?
Good morning, ladies. I'm doing very well.
How was your rains? Yeah. What do you think about the weather? I mean, like, does it mean is this good for business when you start having rains early in January?
Not sure. I think the farmers should start getting ready. Maybe we'll have a surplus.
Bumper harvest this year.
You know, talking about the farmers is quite interesting. We'll have a bumper harvest, but we haven't put in place enough when it comes to storage. You just realize that food waste, and when you're supposed to just save them up somewhere for the rainy day, we don't have that in place. And I'm sure a lot of farmers, I mean, who are entrepreneurs, will be having some problems storing up as well.
So that's a challenge right there. That's a business opportunity for somebody right there. Storage, it's always been a big issue for agriculture here. I mean, because you don't harvest crops all year round. If you do the natural planting and, you know, reaping seasons, you know, so without storage, it's difficult to harvest some crops. Some crops you can do every 3 months. Some crops take 6 months. Some 1 year, some 18 months, some years, and so on and so forth. So without adequate storage facilities, you know, it makes it a bit much more difficult.
So it's a business idea for people out there to actually venture into.
Oh, yes. I mean, things like corn or maize, for example, we always say, oh, corn is not in season for the people who like playing the mouth organ. You know, so corn is not in season. Even things like agbalomo, you know, and stuff like that.
There's a way you can preserve them.
I mean, there are always ways to preserve fruits, you know, or some you know, crops in the end, except for some that have had very short lifespans, you know, but there's always a way to preserve them. You
know? I don't know if Ugo was here when we had a guest who was on Business Half Hour, and he was talking, he was into citrus concentrates and stuff like that in Benue, and he talked about how sending...
Oh, yeah, that was 2 years ago.
Yes, two years ago. I remember him.
I was busy. I wasn't here, though.
A lot of things waste.
Yes.
So we can actually think of how to do that, bit by bit, start looking. And he said, if Nigeria could actually preserve what they had, would be one of the leading producers of citrus concentrates and exporting to the world. So there's so many opportunities we're sitting on that we're not actually cashing in on.
Yes, you're right. So like I said, for a lot of things, not just corn. So it's cheaper to buy corn that is imported across the border from
all canned for you, and you know,
no, not even that. I mean, corn. So, for example, in poultry, from poultry, the bird feed, for example, corn or maize is a core ingredient in there. So it's cheaper to buy imported corn to use to produce that than to use locally made corn as well.
Really? You know,
so because locally made corn is actually more expensive, and so a lot of the guys who do it actually, if they don't buy the feed in bulk from the guys who produce in bulk like that, if they want to do this, they actually prefer to buy the imported corn. For some reason, it's just cheaper to be able to do that. So again, goes to back to the point of the story. Even things like onions, you know. So a few years ago, I heard we couldn't even meet the demand, you know, for onions. So things like your noodles and so on and so forth like that, you know, there's onion in them. There's onion in a lot of foods that we eat, you know, whether prepackaged and so on and so forth like that. We couldn't actually even meet the demand, you know, in itself. Tomato, we still import tomato
paste
or the concentrate, and then make paste here as well, in that sense. And it's also because when before the tomato lands in Lagos or wherever it is, half of the basket is already rotten. So there's a lot of ways. I mean, someone once told me that they had this idea of, oh, just get a plane that would have all the necessary features to be able to store all of that there. So they go to wherever it is in the country, pick it up, and then dump it here. But it used to happen even from Europe, right? So several years ago, when, you know, during another person's not the current administration, they discovered that when some of these courier companies bring in the goods through their cargo planes, they would leave the country empty. Where were they going? They were going to East Africa to go and carry tomato to take back to Europe. there was a presidential committee set up back then to see how we could encourage them to take ours back as well. So there's a lot in terms of what we can do. It's just understanding how to... Logistics is a big issue in farming.
So if we want to start a business now, maybe I decide to venture into this need.
You guys are turning this show into an agri business.
Agripreneurs. We're reaching out to the agripreneurs this morning, aren't we? Taiwan, we? That's what we're trying to do. So we're talking...
We're going
to
have a show. We're going to have an agro person come on the show. I think it's built for February or so. Yeah, so we're going to have a lot of talk about, you know, farming, you know, logistics around farming, how people can invest in farming and all that. There's a guest coming up in February. I think first or second week in February, at least I saw that. Yeah, Niametrics putting that together. So he's going to come and give us a whole lot of lowdown. So Bukola, don't worry.
He's going to come working.
But Lagos, today we want to talk a bit about funding, right? I mean, a lot of the guests that have come on the show have talked about how to raise money, and that's one thing people always think about. Like, I was a few events over the weekend, and it's all been about, look, how do you raise capital to fund your idea, right? And then even when your business has started, how do you then kind of like take it to stage two, or at what point do you, you know, get investors in, or is there a kind of business that you can just start without, you know, for external funding? Or is there a business that, look, without external funding, you can't even, you know, get off the ground? So let's just talk a little bit about different kind of funding that people have out there, Tyro. Someone, you know, a very common one would be bootstrapping. Yeah. Bootstrapping. So, I mean, can you just explain what that means, bootstrapping?
Well, I mean, the clear language is hustle, as in you hustle to be able to raise the funds to do it. So you have this business idea, but you don't have the funds to be able to execute it. So you're doing something else. Sometimes it could be people who have maybe a day job and they're just channeling the funds from that, or they're doing some other kind of business, whether it's consulting or trading and so on and so forth, just to be able to generate enough capital to fund this passion or this dream of theirs to be able to scale it. It could even be that very dream itself. So I mean, we've seen instances of certain people setting up technology companies with a particular product in mind, but they end up venturing into technology consulting just because they have the skill sets to be able to do that. So they can raise some capital and then fund the bigger vision for what they want to do in itself. So essentially, it's using what you have to get what it is you want, or what you want to achieve.
But how reliable is bootstrapping though? Because you know, you have a guy who doesn't even have shishi at all, and you're telling him to you know, start his business with his own money. So I mean, is it anybody that can bootstrap, or you know, somebody who has a day job like you said that can bootstrap? Like, who else can do it?
It's certainly easier for people who have day jobs. So I'll be honest with you, because then you have some level of consistency income. Because with bootstrapping, you also have to worry about income. So
yeah.
And you have to survive, you know. So it's certainly easier for people who have some means of income to be able to bootstrap. But that said, I mean, there have been cases of people who we've seen, who've heard stories of, who have started almost from nothing. I think the key component of bootstrapping is just having that can-do attitude, never giving up, being relentless.
Yeah.
You know, so in your pursuit of your goal, to be able to say that to yourself, regardless of whatever options are, regardless of whatever life throws at me, I will fight back at it, you know. So again, not having cash is not necessarily a deterrent. In most cases, actually propels some people to actually move forward. You know, so as long as you have a roof over your head, you have how to eat, then you know, I think it's possible for anybody to be able to bootstrap. But that said, it's not all businesses that can be bootstrapped, you know, to be honest.
Exactly. I was gonna go there now. It's not all. Not all. So I mean, for you to bootstrap a business, it has to be something that, I mean, it's probably businesses that don't require a lot of capital. And bootstrapping there might probably be maybe buying your own laptop, or paying for internet, or ordering, you know, inventory, maybe the first set of goods, maybe you're into trade. I mean, it's got to be something that requires a lot more of brain work.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, that's basically...
Yeah, so that, and also, I mean, like you said, the barrier to entry has to be very low. You would even be trading, maybe you buy a few things here, then you resell and so on and so forth. So it's not everything, but let's say you wanted to start a, let's look at it now, for example. I don't know how you would bootstrap a, maybe a loan company or a loan app or something. You wanted to do that, so you could build the app.
Yeah,
to get the regulatory approvals, license fees, and so on.
Yeah, you're gonna need some cash. But then, but even at that too, to bootstrap an app, for example, it's not that cheap, because except you have coding skills though, so you probably just code it yourself and all. But if you don't have coding skills and you probably need developers to do it for you, you're gonna have to pay a lot of money. In fact, to get a very good app, you know, I think cost between 1.5 and 3 million depending on what you want in that app. And then you also have maintenance fees that you pay like on a monthly basis, right? So if you want to bootstrap, if you're out there and you're looking to just, you know, start your own business with your own money, it's got to be something that would require probably 70% of your own brain work and your own effort, and then 30% financing. Because bootstrapping basically is you're probably not paying yourself, you're doing all the job. You know, because I don't remember a guest we had late last year. I think it was the last guest last year who was into ticketing. And he was telling us how when he started his ticketing business, when you call and say you want to speak to customer care, it was him.
Call
and say you want to speak to the admin manager, it was him. When you call and want to speak to the HR guy, it was him. If you call and want to speak to the CEO, it was him picking with different kind of, you know, tones and all. So, I mean, like, that was really bootstrapping. And he said it clearly. That, I mean, when he came with all his savings. You know, we located back in Nigeria with all his savings and basically used his money. And at some point, he gave the developers money to develop a site for him. They didn't do it well. Had to learn how to do that himself, right? And started doing it himself. And now, I think it was AfriTickets or something. I mean, it's kind of like everywhere.
I remember.
Yeah, so you got to be able to. So bootstrapping means you got to have a lot of skill yourself.
Willing
to learn as well. I mean, because you're not paying people to do that stuff, so you're gonna be doing a lot of. You're gonna be everybody just to
at
keep
the
up.
Beginning.
Yeah, at the beginning, and then when you don't start making money, you can. And bootstrapping has a lot of upsides to the title, doesn't it?
It has a lot of upsides. Because it helps you develop capacity in almost every area of your business, as the skills, as opposed to you having all the resources available to you at your disposal. Where you can actually hire somebody who's going to be front desk, you're going to hire somebody who's going to be marketing, you hire somebody who's going to be HR and admin and so on and so forth.
So like you have a knowledge of what your business is all about.
Touch every area of it there. You know? So it's actually the ideal way, you know, to actually start a business. It's just that there are quite a number of business solutions that bootstrapping can't solve. Let me put it that way. So you need to have some level of comfort, and it's always better to bring in other people at the same time. They bring their own knowledge and their expertise, you know, to bear.
The funny thing is that when you bootstrap, one of the major advantages of bootstrap, Bukola, is that, so remember, you're not taking in money. You start your business, you haven't brought in any money from external people. It's just your money. So you basically own like 100% of that business. So if you bootstrap and your business really grows, I mean, you have some kind of good spurt and then you make some, you know, make good value. When you're selling off to an investor, you're going to be selling off at a huge premium. So rather than on the outset, maybe when you started, you're probably going to give 50-50 between you and an investor. When you bootstrap and you've really taken your business, you know, further, it could be 70-30.
Because you've built it yourself.
Exactly. So that's a huge upside for bootstrapping. And that's why sometimes it's always better to just kind of save a bit of money before you start your own business, right? Before you get in investors. So, but then after bootstrapping, what next? Or what if you don't have bootstrapping money? Angel investing.
Okay, so friends donating.
Like you said, angel.
Yeah. Do we still have them around? Angel investing. Angel investors will probably be, first of all, your close family.
Family,
friends. People are just like, I'm just, so that you don't just be disturbing me with money. We are take, go and start the business. Don't come back. Oh.
All we want to see is progress.
Just don't waste the money. Just try. You know?
I mean, it also requires some skill. Some people are fortunate to just have people who are able to help them regardless.
Yeah.
Whether they make sense or not, let's just give them and so they leave us alone. You know? But it also requires some, you need to, like was mentioned earlier, you need to have some skill sets to be able to sustain that. Because if somebody comes today and says, oh, you have the business idea, take 10 million and go and start the business, or take 2 million and go and start it, or whatever it is, as an angel investor, I'm not really expecting anything back, you know. So if I get all well and good,
yeah,
you know, so but you have to be able to turn over that money in itself. That's the critical thing. Or at least show some traction, even if you're not able to, if it's not profitable yet, you know. So depending on what kind of business you're doing, you know. So it's important to be able to, again, going back to, you must have something you're offering. You know, there must be a product, there must be a service, there must be something, some value add, you know, that people are willing to pay for, you know, where you can generate some revenue in the first instance.
Yeah.
Angel investors usually would require equity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so some of them could also be terms of, maybe we'll quickly delve into this, maybe in terms of soft loans where they can tell you, like, especially if it's a family and friends, be able to say, okay, I'll give you this X amount of money, you pay me back at so period of time, and so on and so forth, you know, without the huge interest rates up from the banks and so on and so forth. So,
yeah.
That could also be a form of angel investing, you know, in your business, you know, just to be able to kick you off the ground. And if you can't pay the loan, you say, okay, I'll give you 20% of my business or 30% of my business since I can't pay the loan back.
Yeah. So you kind of like convert the loan to equity and all that. And there are some angel investors in Nigeria, though. I'm sure if you guys go online and just maybe search for Angel Investor Network or something, you find them. Yeah. They typically are there. There's a lot of them. And these guys, I mean, it's not a guarantee that they'll put money in your idea, but they typically have like a long list of, you know, of investors, people who want money, you know, in their business or, you know, startups. And then, you know, they usually have pitch days and all, and then you get them in and then you decide whether you want to have them on the show, whether you want to have them in, have your money invested in their business or not. But angel investing is good, it's great. It's also one of the riskiest too, because investors lose money a lot. So most times, most angel investors always seek for significant equity in your business. Like they don't smile, or they can't say they want 80% or something, you know. And a lot of angel investors, they've actually powered a lot of the very household name, you know, companies globally we know today in this world. Is it Microsoft? Is it Facebook? Is it Google? I mean, a lot of these companies were powered by angel investors, people who just put in seed capital, you know, in the early stages.
Rotus is saying here to you guys, it says, Ugo and Taiwo, please, you guys should discuss interest rates in this climate too. So maybe that's the Rotus next topic.
Interest rates.
We'll take a break on Business Half Hour. We'll be back. Well, everybody says that money is slow to enter, but it's quick to go. Does that happen to you?
It does, but please, this year, I don't want money that is quick to go. It should just remain. Don't even go.
And stay for long.
Just stay there. All right, Lagos. So if you're tuning in, this is a Business Half Hour with Naira Metrics. I've got Taiwo as well with me here. So we're giving you, you know, different ways you can raise money for your business, either. If you're looking to start a business very soon, or you have a business you're running already and you're looking for how to raise money, we've talked about bootstrapping, which is basically you using your own funds or your savings to start a business. We've also gone into angel investing, right, which is, you know, getting family or friends or people who typically just give you money without asking for a lot of things. Like you don't need to have a business that's profitable, that's even green revenues. They just see an idea, they like you, and they just put money in your business. So that's angel investing. So we're gonna move up a notch higher to venture capital, right?
Yeah, venture capitals are,
someone said that, you know, he doesn't like venture capitalists because they can basically destroy your business if you don't take time.
So it's, I wouldn't say it's, so it's not easy money, but particularly for venture capitalism from offshore, where people get money offshore. A lot of the guys that, I mean, particularly if you look at the tech space, where a lot of them have gotten money, they've gotten a lot of funding offshore in itself there.
Mm.
And, you know, this money has come, I mean, I guess the requirements of the bar is high, but not as high as the one for local investors in itself. One of the reasons that I think there's some of the guys have been saying that they don't really like venture capitalism and so on and so forth is also because of the way, you know, somebody gives you $1 million and you're earning in Naira. You have to return $1 million, you know, the return on whatever investing there, what investment they've given you, vis-a-vis the equity or their stake in the business, you know,
yeah.
The terms for you know, and all the terms and so on and so forth and like that. It's almost a race, you know, all the time trying to measure up to that in itself. But venture capitalism is also one of the easy ways to be able to start your business. If you can prove, if you can get the, if you can get your ducks in a row and you can get them convinced, you know, they give you money typically anywhere from about 7%, 7 to about 11.
Yeah.
Maybe some as high as 13% for over a period of 7 to maybe 11 years thereabouts. So it's sort of long-term funding, but usually tied to, some of them are tied to certain milestones, some aren't. Some are tied to you being able to deliver certain objectives as well for them in that sense. The benefit for the venture capitals is that by the time they're exiting the business, they're exiting at a multiple of how much they've invested in the business. So for example, if somebody puts in $1 million, let's even use naira, $1 million in year one, or year whenever they give you the money,
yeah,
you know, and 10 years down the line or 7 years down the line, they want to exit. Now, that $1 million could very well become 20 million naira.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, they're taking a lot of risk. They're taking a lot of risk. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they usually don't like coming in until you're doing your maybe your Series A funding, which is the point where you need growth capital, capital to scale.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe we'll talk about that a bit, some of those levels where you have. So we've been talking about the angel investors who usually come in at like your seed level, seed or pre-seed level in that sense. So the pre-seed level is where you have your family and friends and so on and so forth there. Where you just have an idea. The seed level is where you sort of have...
Yeah, seed. It would be nice to explain that to some of our listeners as well. Because you have seed series A, B, C, or seed A, B, C, yeah.
So your seed level would be essentially where you're trying to... Maybe you have a prototype or you've started something in the business that you can show to try some traction, you know. It doesn't mean it has to be profitable, but there's something to show.
For so that's typically like your very first equity raise. That's your seed raise. Okay, okay.
You know, that's your seed level in that sense. And then you have your...
So by the time you go to Series A?
Yeah, so Series A is actually for growth in most cases. So that growth level is where you're trying to say, look, we've done this. We've done this by ourselves for the past 2-3 years. We've had some support from, you know... I mean, to be honest, some the same investors that invested in your seed level or earlier on can also invest in your
in this, in the Series A.
You see the growth and they see that.
And Series A is some kind of progress though, because by the time if you raise seed money and then you move to Series A, that's some kind of progress, because that means that, I mean, your business is now at the growth stage and the what you use your seed money for has kind of like worked, isn't it?
Yes. So there's traction. You know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And different investors watch out for traction in different ways and different industries as well. Like I said, sometimes it's not necessarily about the business being profitable at that point in time, but to be able to show promise. Sometimes it's maybe growth in your customer base. Sometimes it's progress in the product that you're developing, or maybe there's increased interest in that business.
Yeah.
Sometimes it could also be as simple as saying, or maybe the economy in your area, in where you're operating in, for example, Nigeria, maybe is growing in a particular direction and there's some keen interest there. They just want to key in there before the business grows to another level. Your Series B then comes at the point maybe you're trying to do further expansion. So you've done your Series
A. So Series A will typically be where, you know, VCs start to come in, right?
Yes, where they will start to come
in. Yeah, Series A. Okay, so now we're in Series B.
So Series B essentially where, again, VCs, but the stakes are higher.
Yeah.
What you're asking for is higher. The valuation for the company itself is higher based on... the quality of investors you have, based on the quality of the customer base you have, based on the, you know, projections you made or the progress you made financially, revenue wise, and so on and so forth, in that regard.
And for Series B, you got to be able to, I mean, from what I know with Series B funding is you got to have like a major backer.
Yes.
You know, so who already appeared in Series A and he's now in Series B.
Yes.
Like a solid venture capitalist, and then that person now draws in a lot of other guys, isn't it?
You're right.
All right.
It's almost like a league of elites, or a league where if somebody that people recognize or respect in the industry see that the person is already backing you by investing in your business, it doesn't matter whether they have 1% or 2% or 5% of the business, or 50% of the business. Essentially, is being able to say, if this person believes in you, or if this company believes in you, then we're also able to, you know, take a chance with you in that sense.
Yeah.
But the thing with Series B is that you really must show some real numbers.
Yeah, because Series B basically is for you, I mean, developing the business further. So you're no longer in that stage where you're still conceptualizing, you're still testing it. Yeah, you're already making money.
Yeah.
You're just trying to like solidify your market share and your idea and all that. So that's Series B. And then we'll move to Series C.
So Series C essentially is where at that point, maybe some investors are looking to say, we want to exit.
So you start to see the first set of exiting.
And that's where they really have the
valuation.
Multiple valuation for the business in itself. Even some of the founders at that point want to say to themselves, maybe it's time to just cash out a bit of equity. In that sense.
But what's Series C funding used for mostly, though? I mean, I understand that's for, you want to expand market share.
Expanding into new markets
and all that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Maybe new product development, they're vertical or horizontal in itself, mm-hmm.
That's serious cash, though. Series C funding is a lot of money.
You're talking a lot of money. A whole lot of money, but again, it just shows that the business in itself has a lot of viability. However, Series C is not as, in itself there. It's also the riskiest. Because at that point, the business is almost, sometimes it's at its peak.
You never know. All right, Lagos. It's 30 minutes already. You can't even imagine. It's always interesting talking business half hour. So if you're just tuning in, sorry, you missed that. But of course, you can listen to podcast version of this show tomorrow. We're talking about various stages of raising money and various types of fundraising mechanisms that you can use, from bootstrapping to angel investor to venture capital, and also talk about series funding. So you can listen to this show again tomorrow at your own time on our podcast, www.narrowmetrics.com/podcast. Bukola, that's our show for this week.
Thank you, Taiwo. Thank you, Ugo. So we do this again next week. Enjoy the rest of your day and your week.